For Notre Dame football fans, there's no sweeter sound than the words,
"Touchdown Notre Dame!"
or "Irish win."
He's in for a touchdown! The Irish have come from behind!
As a fan of the Fighting Irish, you know that Saturdays in the fall are not just game days. They are unforgettable experiences. Welcome to a fan's perspective on Fighting Irish football. This is Dome and Domer. Here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me, Ed Jordanic, also joining us from NDNation.com, Mike Coffey. All right, fellas, well, this is definitely uncharted waters for this show, that's for sure. It's been like 6 years, I think, and I can't remember ever having the excitement that we're at right now. You could say a lot about the game. I mean, there's several different people, Tao, Golson, I mean, so many guys played well, but I think it makes sense to start right at the very top, and that's with Brian Kelly and his staff. Just the unbelievable game plan that they put together and executed, and yeah, I mean, in hindsight, it looks great as we look at it now, but really everything that he's been talking about all season long with this being a process, I mean, it really showed Saturday night, and his team believes it. I think the fan base is starting to definitely believe it, and you got to really like what's ahead of the Irish in the next four games, no doubt about it. Any arguments, Coffee?
I agree. I think that's it. The thing I liked the most about Saturday night was just the methodical execution of an obvious plan. They went in there knowing what they wanted to do, accomplished it, and even in the parts of the game where things weren't necessarily going Notre Dame's way, there wasn't a deviation, there wasn't any panic, there was just, okay, the plan is going to work, we're going to stick to the plan, and it did. So I think that's a step forward not only for the players but also for the coaches, where both sides are comfortable enough with what they can do and what they know they can do that it just seems so much more methodical and so much more under control in general. It's definitely great to see.
Yeah, they really are coming together. You know, Ed, we talked in the pregame show a bit about what needed to happen, you know, what were some of the keys. And certainly, I think one of the big surprises for me was just how well Golson orchestrated the game. And, you know, I watched the replay again last night, and there were several instances, one of them where probably he made his worst throw of the night. But the thing was, he checked into the right play. He was at the line of scrimmage. It was, I think, 3rd and 7 deep into their territory. He saw that there was one-on-one coverage to Eifert, checked into him, and then just made a bad throw, probably his worst throw of the night. But other than that, the several instances of him throwing the ball out of bounds, I mean, he threw it out of bounds to avoid situations more times Saturday night than he did, I think, in all of the games combined early on. And it just goes to show how he's progressed from the Michigan game where he tried to loft one in there that he had no business throwing to where he's at Saturday night.
Yeah, well, I think that what we're seeing is, you know, we're seeing the development of a quarterback, just like, you know, Kelly's been telling us we would. I mean, the guy is obviously, Golson I'm talking about, is very talented. And I think, you know, we have a tendency, all of us do, things are so compressed these days. We want results so quickly, and you know, we kind of but what we're seeing is that it takes time to establish a program's identity. And what we're seeing really now is we're seeing, I think, you know, there's a lot of evidence that we're really seeing kind of the reemergence of what we all believe to be, you know, Notre Dame football. I mean, it was a mirage with Ty. You know, it was fool's gold with Charlie. And, you know, we kind of got our hopes up, but I think all of us saw these chinks, saw these cracks, that we knew the foundation really wasn't too strong. And I think that, you know, it's been very hard to convince us as fans, you know, that this was, I mean, we had to, but now, I mean, there's just so much evidence in terms of player development, in terms of playing tough, in terms of really, you know, reducing mistakes, both physical and mental, You know, Notre Dame football is, you know, it's what though the odds. It's going on the road in a big game and playing your best. It's playing smart and disciplined and really limiting the errors. It's, you know, one penalty Saturday night, no turnovers. And like you said, it wasn't kind of like some of the earlier games where, you know, there were some, you know, where Golson had some close calls. I mean, really, you know, but it's doing all those little things right. I mean, Chris Watt jumping on that Robbie Thomas fumble, you know, and just making a real drive-saving play there. You know, Cam McDaniel, you know, turning a, you know, being dead to rights on two or three kickoff returns inside the 20 and getting out to the 22 or 23. Theo Riddick, again, just banging ahead for an extra yard or two, you know, to give us a third and four instead of a third and six. And Tommy Reese coming in and, you know, for one play. And, you know, everybody who's watched this team this year knew the ball was going to Eifert one way or the other. But he got it there, and they hooked up for a big first down. Brinza coming back from a rather tough game, you know, a couple weeks ago and you know, having a miss, but just, you know, nailing a 46-yarder at a time that we really needed it. And the coach, you know, the coach is showing confidence in him, and you know, getting out there. The coach is showing confidence in Golson, throwing the ball on first down, you know, expanding the playbook in terms of his getting outside the pocket, of his running the ball, you know, up the gut, you know, sending the running back in motion. And then, you know, that was a great call, the first one. The second one was the one where he got drilled and got the wind knocked out of him. But just so many little things along the way. You know, Kavari Russell, I mean, my gosh, I don't know if he learned how to tackle in high school, but you got to give Kerry Cooks and Bob Elliott a lot of credit for bringing this young secondary along so quickly. Russell had just a tremendous game. The game plan was obviously to keep these speedy receivers in front of them, tackle them in space, not give up the big play. You know, we only rushed three guys most of the time, sometimes four, a couple blitzes. We had one sack, only a couple hurries. But the idea was is to make them kick field goals. And, you know, that'll be the game plan against Barkley too. So there's a real, you know, there's a real identity emerging. But to me, the biggest hallmarks are just the physical and mental toughness. You know, we talked in our pregame about how if Notre Dame was going to win, they were going to bang them and bang them and bang them and keep it close, trade punches with them, you know, basically try to play to a draw in the first quarter when you knew the Sooner crowd was going to be going bonkers. It was going to be a crazy environment. And if we could do that, like we have against Michigan State, like we did against Stanford, like we did against Brigham Young, like we did to a lesser degree against Michigan, we would start to push people around in the fourth quarter. And that's exactly the way.
Yeah, it was. And it's something that, you know, Notre Dame fans that have been watching this team all season long knew it. They knew Notre Dame was capable of this because we've done it. And I think that, you know, the rest of the world, that ND haters who can't stand to watch us, but then want to watch when there's a chance Notre Dame can lose, they learn that, wow, these guys are for real.
But so, I don't even think it's the haters. I just think it's, I mean, I think there's plenty of people who, you know, whether it's the ESPN analysts or other people who aren't kind of watching this team or haven't kind of seen some of the development that maybe we've seen, who look at it and live it and breathe it every day. But but think about it. I mean, look what they have to go on. They've got basically, you know, 15-year body of evidence of us shooting ourselves in the foot at the wrong time, of, you know, mistakes at the wrong time, of, you know, some mental errors, of some penalties at the wrong time, and also of us kind of folding up shop, you know, when the going got a little bit tough in a football game. And it's certainly, you know, certainly hallmarks of these teams, you know, for 10 or 15 years has not been kind of a defense that you could really rely on a third and four or a third and six. I mean, you know, 4 out of 14 is what Oklahoma did on third down. You know, in big games in the past, if you know, we've talked about this 150 times, but if it was third and six, we gave up 8. If it was third and 11, gave up 13, you know, in a big spot. And, you know, we're not doing that now. And I mean, that's good coaching, and it's,
you know, it's a lot of fun now at this point in the season to actually sit here and discuss the BCS and Notre Dame's in the picture. But, you know, Coffee, if you have to look at, I mean, I don't know about you, but the next three games everybody's talking about, I was walking over them. To me, Pittsburgh scares me more than any of them, of the three, only because they got such a good running back. And I know that Pittsburgh's been all over the map this season, But the fact is, you still got to go out there and play the game. And these are 18, 19, 20-year-old kids for the most part. Anything can happen. But in my estimation, it seems like Pittsburgh is the one team that scares me. And it's that, you know, the typical letdown after a big game like winning at Oklahoma.
It's probably the position of the game more than anything else, because we're standing here, everyone's looking to the end of the month. You got Southern Cal just waiting there. That's going to be the next big one. But in between, we have three games against teams that really aren't slated to do much and really haven't been that good so far this year. Boston College is just a terrible football team. And yeah, we could probably go out there a little flat, but they're so bad that I think that we can be, and the same really with Wake Forest. I think the reason that Pittsburgh it generates that amount of concern is, number one, it's the first of the three. We still have maybe an emotional hangover from a fantastic performance in Norman. Now we're coming home. Everybody's talking about how great we are. Oh, the number three in the BCS, looking at the national championship, let's price flights to Miami, et cetera, et cetera. But still got to take care of these three games. And the first one, you get the feeling they're either going to maintain their focus and really hammer them, or there's going to be a close call. And if there is a close call, you got to figure that's going to wake them up enough for the next two games against teams that are terrible. But it's this first game against a team that is not good, but is capable of at least giving us a solid game, as opposed to the other two. If Boston College was the first one, or Wake was the first one, I wouldn't necessarily be as concerned, even though I'm not to say that I'm hugely concerned, but Pitt of those three stands the best chance of giving Notre Dame a solid game against not great, but decent competition. And that's the situation where if Notre Dame's not focused, if Notre Dame isn't really playing with the same cohesion as they've been showing the last couple weeks, they could stumble.
Yeah, no, there's definitely that. You know, I don't want to get way too far ahead of us, Ed, but I'll go ahead and do it. I think one of the other things that's really got us as fans, and especially guys that live and breathe it like we do, is there signs that are starting to emerge that Brian Kelly's putting a program together that's going to be good for a while. This is not just this out of the fluke 1 year great run that we make and we somehow got lucky to get in the position we're in. There's a lot of young guys playing some football for us right now, and there's a lot of recruits that are coming to Notre Dame, and there are kids currently looking at Notre Dame. And I think that, you know, he's really found a way to get his guys in there. And I think that he's now starting to build some momentum. I mean, we all know that the Notre Dame job is about as tough as it comes. I mean, Brian Kelly in his third year, you know, doing 11-1 or 12-0 or whatever he ends up doing is clearly going to set a bar for himself that we all think should be the next 5 years. But you got to give him a lot of credit for where he's at right now and getting this team to play the way that they are, but also building a program the way that he's done it.
Well, I mean, I really think that goes back to, you know, that that's his MO, that he's a program builder. And like I said, we wanted, you know, results right away. But there were things, I think, that he was looking at in the development of the program, you know, that we were kind of missing. Of course, obviously, we're going to measure everything by wins and losses, and I think he was too. But there was, you know, it's kind of, I think when you're an experienced program builder, when you're a coach, like, you know, when Holtz came to Notre Dame in 85, or, you know, you've got a bunch of different, you know, examples of this, you know, when Urban Meyer showed up at Florida after the Ron Zook disaster, and, you know, these different guys that you know, they're really kind of focused on things like attention to detail and attitude and the way you approach practice and how you practice and kids getting more serious about their work and how hard they work in the summer and how much bigger, stronger and faster they come back and how seriously they take their studies and how seriously they, you know, just a bunch of things that just kind of demonstrate a different level of commitment. And so I think that's kind of what we're seeing the results of now. And to me, that's why, I mean, we kind of talked about the time, but that's kind of why I like the Brian Kelly hire kind of more than a more established guy like a Stoops or something, because it just seemed to me that he had a hunger, that he had accomplished quite a bit, but he'd done it at a level kind of a notch below where Notre Dame was on the national scene. and that the idea of kind of applying his program building methods and his player development methods and his kind of standard setting methods on a huge kind of national kind of, you know, big stage level was something that he really was embracing. And to his credit, you know, there were ups and downs, you know, and there still will be. But I mean, he has kind of altered a little bit as he's kind of become more comfortable in the job. And you can kind of see it. You can see a little bit of a, you know, of a throttling back of the anger, because he's got a little bit more of, you know, they understand a little bit more of what's expected of them. So he's able to kind of trust them a little bit more. I mean, you know, look at the way that he's trusted Golson. I mean, the things that are going to drive him crazy now going forward are the things like we saw on Saturday night, you know, when Nicholas wasn't ready to go into the game and the tight end coach Scott Booker didn't have him ready to go into the game. And that's when Kelly exploded. Right? You know, and
yeah,
so
exactly.
So those are the
right.
things when you kind of set a standard of expectation of performance and of preparedness and of, you know, being into it mentally and those kinds of things, you know, and then that slips, that's what's going to set you off. That's a whole different level of kind of, you know, that's where you want to get to when the players and getting back to just real quick about, you know, this whole Pittsburgh thing and stumbling and, you know, and perhaps, I mean, the reason that I have less concern about that is because of what Tao said after the game to Herb Street, who basically asked him the same question about, okay, how do you deal with this now that you've had success? And Manti said, listen, you know, none of us have ever been 8-0 before. And none of us have played a perfect football game yet. I mean, I think that the biggest thing that will make sure that we do not stumble against Pittsburgh, and then I think that, you know, we'll beat, you know, we'll win handily and win the next three games handily, is because there is so much pride in that defensive unit. You know, they did not want to give Oklahoma, they did not want the final score to be 30-20. You know, they wanted it to be 30-13. I mean, they did not want to, you know, so there's a different level of pride there, and they're so strong up the middle with Nix and Manti and Mata. You know, I just think that is what will, you know, kind of, if they do have a little bit of a backsliding offensively, which I don't think they're going to do, because I think as Golson gets more comfortable, the offense just is that much better. Because they've got so many other guys that can, you know, do a good job, but I just don't see them stumbling before USC, and you know, I could see USC losing to Oregon, Notre Dame, and UCLA before this season is over and finishing 7-5, and you know, it's just a mess out there because they look soft to me. You know, I mean, Barkley is great, but if we keep those receivers in front of us like we kept the Oklahoma receivers in front of us, you know, we're going to kick their ass in the second half too, because they're pretty soft.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with you on that point. You know, Pittsburgh is a little bit of a concern, but I think you're going to find out a lot about Brian Kelly and this program and where it's at. And they may have a little bit of a hangover in that first quarter, but I tend to agree with you. There's too much pride at stake. You know, one of the interesting aspects of the season so far, Coffee, has been just the play of Tao and how he's stepped his game up. And I mean, he's legitimately a Heisman candidate. I mean, he's got 5 picks right now. I think in the next 3 games, if he has like a pick six or, you know, a few more big stats to pad, I mean, he's literally a serious contender for the Heisman, especially if Klein stumbles a little bit. And, you know, maybe they lose against Oregon State and he does so, you know, kind of bad. Anything can happen.
No, I absolutely agree. And I think what makes Tao's story more compelling, or maybe even his candidacy more compelling, it's not like he's not a great player and he's being buttressed by the fact that he goes to Notre Dame and there's hype and all that. He could be at any school. If he playing the way he was playing, he would get it. He would already be deserving. What really, in my mind, puts him over the top is he has the off-field things going for him just as the on-field. He's not someone who puts a football uniform on, goes out and kicks ass once every week. Think of all the stories about the things he's been through this this season and the things that he's done. Sending that letter to the parents of the little girl who was a huge fan of his who was dying of leukemia and all that stuff. It's not like he went to a reporter and said, "Hey, look what I'm doing." He just does those things. I mean, if you're looking for someone to counteract the image of college and pro football players of entitled, prima donna jerk offs. I mean, this guy is the antithesis of all that. He is a high quality human being who's playing football, and I really hope that the Heisman voters are not only looking at his abilities on the field, but they're taking into account the fact that there is nobody who has performed better off the field in addition to on the field than Manti Te'o has.
Yeah, there's definitely some neat stories about him, and I think, you know, Manti, no doubt about it, is the embodiment of what Notre Dame's all about. I mean, he's just a class act, but he also is a great football player. I mean, I think everything that he's done on the field, from playing middle linebacker at Notre Dame, I mean, he's totally deserving. There's no doubt about it. It's a way uphill long shot battle for him. I mean, for somebody on the defensive side of the ball to win the Heisman is about as tough as it gets. But you do got to give him a lot of credit for where he's at today and just the leadership that he's brought to this team. I mean, he has an impact when he's on the field and other guys are around him, and they don't want to let a guy like that down. And some of these younger players that have really stepped up, I mean, I got to believe that it's part of it is them looking through the corner of their eye and seeing number five in the middle of the defense, you know, as we go to stuff there in the fourth quarter of, you know, all these downhill rushes that are coming at us from all angles. I mean, he just really has had one hell of a season.
Oh, absolutely.
So hopefully that'll continue.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'd love to see that continue.
And I think that the cohesion you describe is not only on the defensive side of the ball, it's on both lines. And that is really what's driving our success this season. Last week there was a video out on the net. I wouldn't say it went viral, but it was passed around a lot of the various websites. One of the linemen for Oregon is doing some kind of a video podcast and spent some time talking about the Notre Dame-Oklahoma game and that he had watched film of Notre Dame, and he said the biggest difference he saw was how cohesive the unit was, how well they were working together, that Oklahoma might have better individual talent, but Notre Dame was playing as a team. And it's the playing as a team, both on the offensive line and the defensive front seven, that is really making this season go as much as anything else. Because when you're comfortable with your teammates, that they can make the play, and that you don't have to get out there and do everything, you're going to do everything you can do, but you know that the guy next to you is doing that as well, and the guy on the other side of you is doing it. You know what they can and can't do. You know what you have to do to make the team better. Just that group knowledge and that group action and playing together, it's just made such a huge difference. I mean, watching our offensive line play, yeah, you'll get occasions where like Golic or Cave or someone will get blown up on an individual play, but overall, just the ability to play as a unit really has made the offense multidimensional. The ability for the front seven to play as a unit has taken the pressure off a young secondary and allowed them to develop to where they're now pulling their weight because they've been able to learn and make their mistakes without anything being catastrophic. So that ability to work together the importance cannot be overstated.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I think that Ed, what's going to be really interesting is heading into this end of the season, you've got these games in front of us, which is really the opportunity for Golson to mature even more and to get him as seasoned as you possibly can, because he's going to need to be there if Notre Dame does find some luck come its way and we end up in the BCS championship game. The offense is going to have to deliver. They're going to have to deliver like they did against Oklahoma. And I think it's going to be real interesting to see if the reins become looser and looser and looser on Golson as we head towards USC.
Yeah, I mean, I just think he's going to get better and better and better. I mean, because remember, he strikes me, as we've talked about before, he just needs reps. I mean, he just needs to play. He just needs to play the game. I mean, he strikes me as a guy who, the more he plays, the better he gets. The more he's familiar, the more he's easy. You know, it's easier for him to recognize defenses and coverages. And also, it was really interesting, some of the comments after the game from TJ Jones and some other guys about how, you know, towards the beginning, and Golson himself, you know, didn't feel like he had definitely not necessarily the offense's support, you know, that there was, and that could have easily been, you know, there was probably a fair amount of evidence that you know that Tommy had a much better grasp on this offense and was a much better option for some of those guys. You know, certainly the older guys, you know, like Eifert and maybe T.J. Jones and some of the offensive linemen. So, you know, I mean, you can't discount the human factor on this. There's no doubt that there was probably an element of, you know, okay, has this kid earned it? You know, they're making him the starter, but, you know, he's not as good in practice. We can see it. He doesn't know as much. He doesn't, you know, but you know, to Kelly's credit, he stuck with him. He was able to have the luxury of Tommy at the same time bring this quarterback along, because he knew that Everett was never going to kind of earn that kind of respect and take on that leadership role during practice. It was going to have to come under, you know, being battle tested, under fire, and he was going to have to earn that respect on the field. And Kelly was going to have to walk that balancing act between putting his team in a position to win at the same time, developing that leadership and developing that respect from the rest of the offense for Golson. And the comments after the game seem to indicate that he's made really great big strides in a commanding presence in the huddle, knowing, you know, what's going on, like you both have been talking about tonight, checking into the right plays and making good decisions. So, you know, you put those two things together, his incredible physical gifts with some trust from his fellow offensive players. I mean, and, you know, you've got a pretty damn potent offense, because you've already, like you've alluded to, have an offensive line that works well together, that, you know, is obviously in really good physical condition and can kind of, you know, dominate a team in the fourth quarter. You've got good running backs. You've got, you know, an All-American tight end. So, you know, I just think the offense will just continue to get better. You know, who knows what will happen with we don't have much control over that, but listen, you know, I mean, give me Alabama and make us 18-point dogs, you know? I mean, I'll take that every day from now until January 7th, you know, and, you know, forget it. I mean, who wouldn't want that opportunity? There'll be absolutely no pressure, you know, on Notre Dame, nobody will expect anything, and, you know, just like Oklahoma, you know, so you know, we can't worry about that. Yeah, we can't worry about that stuff now. I would like for Notre Dame to play an SEC team in a bowl game, whether it's, you know, lucky enough to be, you know, in Alabama for the national championship, or, you know, a one-loss Notre Dame team or something, or an undefeated Notre Dame team who gets squeezed out, you know, playing a LSU or playing a, you know, Florida, right, exactly, or Florida or Georgia, because I think that'd be a great measuring stick. So I don't know if we'll get that opportunity, but I mean, that.
It's going to be. I do think that what will happen is we will face a very formidable opponent. We're not going to go into a BCS game and not face somebody doggone good, because, like you say, it's going to be Florida, LSU, or Alabama. They're going to put us with them. There's no doubt about it. I don't see us playing Kansas State with one loss or anything like that. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, there's a lot of football to go in between. It's going to be kind of cool for us to all of a sudden now be interested in the Oregon game and maybe watch it. You know, I mean, it's a great feeling to be in at the end of the season here as we head down to the last.
Well, if Arizona scored 39 on USC, I mean, Oregon might score 69. I mean, I don't.
Yeah, it could be ugly. You know, it's going to be really interesting. I think you're right, though. If USC loses Saturday, I mean, that whole place may collapse. I mean, it could just be disaster out there on the West Coast.
Well, the
USC
thing is kind of...
Oh, no, what an awful thing that would
well,
be.
Well, you know, the thing that's really interesting about that is, you know, I mean, there's a double-edged sword through this whole, about this whole kind of, you know, tradition thing, right? Because what I was thinking about today was, you know, in days gone by, you know, when kind of tradition was a big deal and kids kind of paid attention to this stuff and coaches really, you know, emphasized it, and there weren't kind of these, you know, I don't think Lane Kiffin gives a damn about, you know, USC Notre Dame history, and I'm not sure Brian Kelly, you know, deep down really cares too much about it either. But, you know, there was a time when this game was so big that it didn't really matter what kind of a season the other teams were having. It was just you know, a very, you know, it was a circled game on the schedule no matter what. So what's interesting to me is, even if USC does lose to Oregon, or, you know, is starting to fall apart a little bit, does playing Notre Dame and having the opportunity to ruin their season, or to beat Notre Dame, you know, at home, does that get through to those kids? In other words, is that something that will get them up and get them focused that week, or are they already thinking about the beach? You know, is Barkley already thinking about,
Yeah, I don't. I would agree with you. I do think USC will come after us. They'll want to.
I would think their fan base would be, but I wonder about the locker room. You know, I really do, because that stuff has been so de-emphasized, and you know, kids play for different reasons than they used to. I mean, you know, they play for each other, they play for their futures, they play for their, you know, they play for. But you know, I mean, I don't know. I you know, it's been a long time since maybe they play, you know. Maybe there is, you know, with those, you know, with Marcus Allen and those guys coming to practice and stuff, maybe they do have a sense of it, but I really wonder how much it means. I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Yeah, I think there's some great games ahead. It's going to be a lot of fun for us. There's no doubt about it. We'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jernanek and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.